I've always wanted to know how the universe worked. Ask my mom, and she'll be able to tell you stories about the weird and wonderful questions I would ask her nearly always at bedtime. I can't remember most of them, but the conversations would typically go like the ones the science author Randall Munroe had with his mum. Randall, are there more soft things or hard things in our house? Randall's mum, I don't know. Randall, how about in the world? Randall's mum, I don't know. Randall, well, each house has three or four pillows, right? Randall's mum, right. Randall, and each house has about 15 magnets, right? Randall's mum, I guess. Randall, so 15 plus three or four, let's say four, is 19, right? Randall's mum, right. Randall, so there are probably about 3 billion soft things and 5 billion hard things. Well, which one wins? Randall's mum, I guess hard things? To my mum's relief, I found many of the answers I was searching for in the science textbooks. And so it's not a huge surprise that I ended up pursuing a career as a scientist in drug discovery and development. Now, science might have explained to me why penguins' feet don't freeze, and many other crucial things about the physical universe. But when I was 27, I found something else with incredible explanatory power: the Christian gospel. It explained who I was, who God is, and why the world is how it is. It gave me so many answers to my deepest questions, and never once did it occur to me that there might be a clash with my passion for science. But that is how it seems. In the past, as some would say to me, we saw a flash of lightning, and since we didn't understand it, we said, God did it. Now, because of science, we understand what lightning really is. Belief in God is so old-fashioned. In fact, many people go further, labeling belief in God not just unnecessary, but also illogical and even harmful. The new atheist movement, which has waged war on Christianity, is led by prominent scientists such as Richard Dawkins, and their core claim is that science is on their side. As Steven Pinker says, the findings of science imply that the belief systems of all the world's traditional religions and cultures are factually mistaken. But then, isn't it strange that there are so many Christian scientists? Loads of them. In fact, Christians compose the majority of Nobel Prize winners: 73% in chemistry, 65% in physics, and 62% in medicine. In addition, you might expect centers of scientific excellence to be scarce in Christian cultures, but many of the world's top universities, including Oxford, Cambridge, Harvard, and Yale, were all founded as explicitly Christian institutions. So there clearly isn't a fight between science and God. But there obviously is a fight going on. So who is it between? Well, the answer is two opposing worldviews. On the one hand, a Christian worldview, which believes that the universe was created by God. And on the other hand, an atheistic worldview based on a philosophy called scientism, also known as naturalism. Now, while science is a method for investigating the world around us, finding out how things work, the philosophy of scientism goes much further. It states that science is the only way to truth. If you want to know something, anything at all, science is the only way. Now, it doesn't take long to see a flaw here. If scientism were true, then we could immediately get rid of half the faculties in any school or university: history, literature, languages, art, and music, just for starters. While science as a method is great at investigating complicated physical things like how stars form, it's obviously terrible and unable to answer even simple questions like, why am I here? Or what's right and what's wrong? It's important to realize that science and scientism are not the same thing. One is a method for exploring the universe. The other is a philosophy which puts science on an impossible pedestal. As we've already seen from all those Christian scientists, you don't need to be a believer in scientism to do great science. So the fight is real, but it's not between science and Christianity. It's between a flawed philosophy, scientism, and anyone who believes in God. Now, we could continue to explore the flaws in scientism in ever more detail, but instead, we'll focus on what we're really interested in, the true relationship between science and Christianity. And as we look carefully, we'll see that contrary to popular opinion, belief in the Christian God, in fact, points us towards science. And not only that, but the discoveries of science point us towards God. So firstly, God points to science. The origins of science are rooted in Christianity. The Franciscan friars, Roger Bacon and William of Ockham, started it all in the 13th century, while founding fathers and heroes of science such as Francis Bacon, Robert Boyle, Galileo, Isaac Newton, Johannes Kepler, Michael Faraday, James Clerk Maxwell and Lord Kelvin, to name but a few, all fiercely believed in God and spurned atheism. Now, interestingly, at the time when this was happening in early modern Europe, other parts of the world, in particular China, were more technologically advanced. So why did the explosion of modern science happen in this part of the world and not somewhere else? Well, the answer is that Europe was predominantly Christian. Those early men of science believed in an orderly creator God, and so expected to find that order in his creation, the observable universe. In the words of C.S. Lewis, men became scientific because they expected law in nature, and they expected law in nature because they believed in a lawgiver. It is the Christian worldview, rather than the atheistic one, which gives a better foundation for doing science. Without a creator, there's no reason to believe that the universe should be orderly, or that we should be able to make sense of it. As Alvin Plantinga puts it, if Dawkins is right, that we are the product of mindless, unguided natural processes, then he has given a strong reason to doubt the reliability of human cognitive faculties, and therefore, inevitably, to doubt the validity of any belief that they produce, including Dawkins' own science and his atheism. In other words, take God out of the equation, and everything becomes random, including our brains. And in a universe where everything is random, science stops working. The atheist science has to take a leap of faith each time they pick up their test tube, that for no good reason, the universe makes sense, and their thoughts are to be trusted. The Christian scientist has no such problem. So we can see that it is because of, not in spite of, belief in God, that modern science exists at all. Believing in God gives you a reason to believe in science. God points to science. But secondly, science points to God. And this one might be the one that surprises you the most, because there's a popular view that belief in God is simply to explain the bits of the universe that science hasn't got to yet, like lightning. But a little more science, and God disappears. This is known as the God of the gaps. But I don't know anyone who believes in a God like that. The Christian God is not like that at all. The Bible begins with the words, In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He's not just the God of the bits of the universe that we don't understand. He's the God of everything. And so doing science is a great way to better understand the fantastic world he has created. The world-famous laboratories in Cambridge, where scientific discoveries such as the electron, the neutron, and the structure of DNA were made, have an inscription above their doors from Psalm 111. Great are the works of the Lord. They are pondered by all who delight in them. When we do science and understand a little more of how the universe works, we don't push God out of the way. We shine a little more light on the genius of the Creator who did it that way. But let's go a step further, because Psalm 19 that we've just read says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the work of his hands." If God really did create the physical universe, then we would expect that as we look at it, we should see his fingerprints. And thanks to science, we see them everywhere. In the late 1940s, when Hubble's redshift observations emerged, a new theory that the universe had an origin began to take root in the scientific community. Prominent astronomer of the time, Sir Fred Hoyle, fought this with his own steady-state theory because he was fiercely opposed to the idea of a creator and was concerned about giving too much credence to the Christian worldview. It was Hoyle who first coined the phrase Big Bang during a radio interview where he was attempting to discredit the theory. In the end, mounting evidence convinced most cosmologists that Hoyle's steady-state model was incorrect, and that the Big Bang was the one that agreed better with the observations. Today, it's widely accepted that the universe had a beginning. And so you have to have an explanation for that. You can't just accept that the universe came into existence from nothing while maintaining intellectual credibility. If not God, then what? And how? And is that explanation more plausible? This isn't lazy God of the gap style thinking. This is a situation where the more science we do, the more we understand, the more we see the evidence for God revealed. The science actually points us towards God. I'll give you another example. It's because of science that we now know that the universe is precisely geared for the exact conditions required for life, to such an extent that the probability of this happening by chance is practically zero. This is known as the fine-tuned universe. Let me explain. There are a number of physical constants which scientists use to mathematically describe the universe, such as how well hydrogen becomes helium, and how many dimensions there are. Now, you don't need to know them, but the point is that if any of them were different, even by a little bit, then life would never have happened. One example is the density parameter omega, which is approximately 1. Any smaller, and stars would not form. Too big, and the universe would have immediately collapsed after it was formed. And there are a whole set of parameters, and each is just as it needs to be. Again, why should this be? Explanations such as a multiverse are extremely speculative. However, if the universe were created by an intelligent designer God, then this is exactly what we would expect to find. The fingerprints are everywhere. And we could go on. There are many other examples to look at, had we the time, including the rational intelligibility of the universe, the origin of life, the development of the human mind, and so on. The weight of the scientific evidence points to a creator God. And so, if we do science with an open mind, ready to go where the evidence leads us, no matter how unexpected or uncomfortable that may be to us, then we must be prepared to consider that science points us directly towards a God who created everything. The late Stephen Hawking once said that belief in God is a fairy story for people afraid of the dark. But as John Lennox points out, we might equally say that atheism is a fairy story for people afraid of the light. Or maybe you haven't considered the possibility of the existence of God before. Maybe you've ruled that out before we've even started. Well, in that case, let me encourage you to take a fresh look, a fair and balanced look. Romans 1 says, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse." Science points to God. So we've seen that there's no fight between science and Christianity. In fact, science and Christianity are the best of friends. God points to science, and science points to God. But let's not stop quite there. It's one thing to believe in a God, but what good is that to us as a concept, kind of remote and unreachable? And here is the wonderful thing about the Christian message. The God who created the universe is not just a thing, but a person. And it's possible to know him personally. When I was 27, I saw a girl who I liked the look of, and there were lots of things that I could tell about her. She had brown hair, she had blue eyes, she had a great smile, she was maybe a little bit on the small side for me, but you can't have everything. But standing at a distance, that was all that I could learn about her. To get to know her, I had to let my guard down, sit next to her, and talk to her. And when I did, I started to truly discover who she was and what she was like. That would never have happened if I'd kept my distance and watched on from afar. And it's the same with God. You can keep him at a distance and ask theoretical and philosophical questions about him for years. And many of those questions may be good and important. And skepticism is great to a point. But somewhere along the line, if you really want to know him, you have to sit down with God and engage with him. And that's what I did for the first time when I was 27 years old in a church in Cambridge, by listening to a talk from the Bible and actually taking it seriously. I never regretted talking to that girl, although I'm sure on many occasions she's regretted talking to me because she's now my wife. But I've never regretted getting to know God and his incredible love for me. Don't be a skeptic all your life. Hasn't science disproved Christianity? Well, I hope we've seen that the answer is no. Far from it. Being a Christian and a scientist is great fun, entirely consistent, and a great privilege.